Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters. Today is Monday, the 3rd of November, and this episode 1287. I'm afraid I have some bad news and some good news. I'll start with the good news. I'm joined by Brother Firas and Brother Luca. And the bad news is everything that will follow. We are going to talk about the establishment wanting us to suffer, Mexico being a failed state. And towards the end, I'm going to talk to you about the genocide of Christians in Sudan and Nigeria. Right, so buckle up. This is going to be one of the saddest podcasts that we have ever done. But we have to speak about these issues because if we don't do, very few will, and we have to do it. So should we start with the first episode?
Yes, let's do that. Let's do that. So I don't want to start immediately with the train stabbings. I want to sort of talk about the environment before that. On the 31st of October, we had calls for the some kind of action to be taken after an asylum seeker stabbed to death another immigrant, actually, Gurvinder Johal, in a bank branch. He just walked into the bank branch, stabbed him on the 31st, on the 6th of May, and then on the 31st October, he was sentenced. And there's all kinds of talk about that. Then on the 2nd of November, we had somebody in Glasgow basically going around assaulting girls, and one of the locals gives him a talking to, but it's entirely pointless. You can see from the clip here that the man is wasted, drunk, a wastrel. Nobody knows where he's from, but he's running around abusing random girls in Glasgow city centre. In New York, on the 31st of October, it came out that a man confessed to raping a woman in New York. Now, here, the York press says that they mention his name. They don't give any details. But then in another article, they tell you that actually he's an illegal migrant. He typically hangs around clubs, chases women wherever he can find them. And in this particular incident, he takes a woman, frog marches her into an alleyway or something, and then proceeds to rape her. First, he pled not guilty, and then he changed his plea, but he had a partner, and the partner wasn't charged.
I'll just say on the question of York as well, I think according to the last census of 2021, York is one of the few cities in England that had been not untouched, but like was still had very secure demographic, about 90% English. And right. So to see this starting to pour into York is dreadful.
I lived in York for 7 years and it's a wonderful city. I will say though that there was some problem with spiking drinks.
Yep.
Well, and I have heard sadly incidents of the sort many times.
So also on the 31st of October, it came out that a man by the name Izzeddin Sheikh Suleiman was arrested because he was now in Britain as an illegal migrant, but he had been accused of raping a child in Germany, and now he's being extradited. In Kent, in Faversham, a man goes around saying that he wants to kill people, screaming Allahu Akbar, no particular details around him other than the obvious, but he's running around Faversham with a big knife trying to kill whoever he can find. In terms of police priorities, you see that the police made a chippy remove benches because these might be used as weapons. In Somerset.
I mean, if you can use benches as weapons, what else can't you not use?
Pretty much. And then in Leeds, there was a pro-Palestine protest, and this guy climbs on top of a police van with a Quran, yelling, Allahu Akbar, la ilaha illallah, all of that stuff. And it seems he or somebody around him in that riot had set a police van on fire. These are all in the last couple of days. Like, I'm not even doing the full week. I'm just covering the last couple of days. In Birmingham, you have a massive fight between what looks like a couple of transsexuals and a group of migrants. And you see in this video that the migrants are going around using pretty big fireworks and firing them at vehicles, police cars, whatever they can get their hands on. And you can see that this is a massive risk of arson. And you can see that it quite easily a car could catch on fire. I won't show you the whole video, but you get the point. Also, on the 31st, a man, Musleh Al-Utaybi, is sentenced for... the news comes out that he's sentenced on the Thursday. But earlier reports, we find out that actually he's an illegal migrant from Saudi Arabia, and that he had been on the central line between Oxford Circus and Mile End, where he assaulted a 17-year-old girl.
Obviously, she didn't shout mate loud enough, as Sadiq Khan would have had to do.
Yeah. And then also on the 31st of October, it comes out that on the 21st of October, a teenager had been raped in Clare Park in Haywards Heath. This is just the news that came out between the 31st on today, you know? And also, 31st October, an asylum seeker is sent to jail for 3 years for actually raping and assaulting a woman. Fawaz Al-Samo, maybe Iraqi, don't know, you know, originally from Syria. Okay, so close by.
The point is, 3 years for something of the sort is just
too lenient.
It's just a, excuse me, it's just an FU to people.
Yeah. Too lenient.
Yeah.
And then, just as a reminder, on the 28th, Wayne Broadhurst had been murdered by a 22-year-old Afghan illegal asylum seeker. That's the word that's doing a lot of heavy lifting. So this is the context, just in the last week, of the incidents that have happened. Like, and I'm sure there's more, you know? I just did a search for a couple of hours, and this is what I could find. Mm. I'm sure there's more. I'm sure there's incidents that are going to be reported next week as having previously happened, et cetera, et cetera. And you see this steady tempo, this endless tempo of one attack after the other and just stupidity from the police. I mean, is it really British people who are throwing around picnic benches and attacking people with picnic benches?
Doesn't really have any historical precedent. The other thing as well, of course, that I would just like to say about this is the way that the state treats these types of events, yep. Which is just to say that if you have something like, oh, I don't know, Mo Farah just won a race for England, right? Or, oh, this immigrant just opened up this wonderful restaurant, right?
Right.
Then that is always regarded as, even if they are second generation, third generation, it's used as an argument for how
yep.
people of immigrant backgrounds enrich us and it works. These examples are not allowed to be used,
yep,
according to the state, as examples of why it's been an absolute effing disaster.
Yep, exactly.
That has claimed countless lies.
One side of it.
The very fact that crime data are not published with ethnicity is an admission that something is going wrong. Because if that weren't the case, they would have concrete evidence and they would say, hey, look, integration or a form of assimilation is working. It is helping. Them listening that they are well-behaved helps to their integration. But nothing of this sort happens.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So then on Saturday, in this environment of just steady attacks on girls, on women, on men, on pretty much everybody, we get the stabbing on a train that was from going from Doncaster to London.
Train I've got more than any other. Been on it countless times.
Right, right. And a few minutes after the train departs, this guy, Anthony Williams, goes around stabbing people. 10 people get stabbed. But it turns out that he had spent his day also in a bit of a stabby mood. So here's some video of him in London. Getting absolutely wasted. Clearly doing nothing of benefit to other human beings, to society in general. He walks into a barber shop with a knife. He walks in and he's parading this knife, and we have no idea what's going on. But he gets reported to the police, and nothing happens. Like, he walks in, he's waving a knife. I don't know what's in his other hand. Anyway. Clearly pointless human being. He gets tased and he asks the police to kill him. He gets captured by the police and tased, and he's asking the police to kill him. There were some heroes on that train. The driver is commended. He's a veteran. He's commended for quickly diverting the train and making sure that the police get on. And another man actually gets in the way of the knife, and the man holding the knife, and a young woman he was trying to stab. For his efforts, he gets stabbed twice. As of now, there are 5 people still in hospital. 11 people in total were hospitalized. Five of them are still in hospital. 2 of them were supposed to be in life-threatening condition. So we pray for their recovery. And the police are saying that there's no terrorist motive. And we know that we're going to get the story about this being mental health. And we're going to go into the same argument. No, he should be kept in some kind of secure hospital and paid for by the taxpayer for life. When everybody knows that the reasonable thing to do with somebody who's too insane to not go around trying to murder people is to hang them. We know that the thing to do is obviously to hang somebody like that, because it turns out that he then assaulted a police officer after he got arrested. And so on top of the 10 or 11 attempted murder charges that he's facing, he's also facing a charge of aggravated bodily harm, meaning that he did succeed in assaulting that officer after he was detained. And meaning that this person has no control over himself and can't stop attacking people. The police say that they sort of declared the Plato, the national code word for a marauding terror attack, but then they were saying there is nothing to suggest that this is a terrorist incident, meaning that the guy is just completely out of control.
It's not ideological.
No.
He just wanted to harm. He wanted to kill.
Yeah. Like Axel Rudabakana.
Yeah.
And like many others like him who will just go around stabbing, stealing, doing evil for no obvious reason. And the narrative now is about, is this illegal migration? No, the guy was born in Britain. A cat born in a barn is still a cat. It doesn't change who you are.
I say this as an immigrant myself without any sort of sensitivity. But it is very much about immigration because certain groups are more prone to crime, to schizophrenia, to mental illness, than others.
And isolated incidents.
Exactly.
Within quotations.
Exactly.
What I want to say is that very frequently, if the guilty person, let's say, in any kind of incident is someone that the left doesn't consider oppressed and it's an oppressor, they instantly...
it's part of the pattern.
Yeah, they instantly say it.
See a pattern.
Yes.
When it
doesn't suit them to see a pattern, they say, far right, you far right people, I want you to shut up. So when they don't do this almost instantly, it means that it comes from a group that the left wants to portray as oppressed.
Yep.
And that's exactly what they did in this case.
Always.
They were trying to come up with 1.5 days or 2 days with the British-born thing.
You knew he was ethnically foreign the moment that you saw British National in the headline.
And you knew that the minute they delayed announcing his ethnicity.
Yeah.
I mean, we sort of saw the example with the Liverpool car incident where they immediately released his ethnicity.
Yes.
Now they're stuck and it took them 12, 16, 24 hours, whatever it did, to actually release it. He had stabbed someone earlier in the day on the DLR. But because it was only one person getting stabbed, the police didn't respond in force, and so he got away. And then he proceeded to commit this attack. And one eyewitness says, a girl says that he was coming to her, and she said, please, please don't. Then something changed in his eyes, and he said, the devil is not going to win. The taxi driver who saw the guy getting arrested said that he was laughing, and he told the officers arresting him, the devil always wins. So we have someone saying that he's essentially possessed by demons, or that he's serving the devil, or whatever it is. And you see the pattern constantly, and you see this being repeated time and time and again.
At some point, we have to think of public safety.
Yes.
And the public good.
Yep.
And I'm entirely fed up with this woke nonsense that says that all we need is representation of particular groups in the police force or something. No, we want the protection of the common good. We want public safety. And this is the number one duty of government.
Yep, exactly.
It's to protect the public safety. It's not to come up with constant excuses as to why they can't do it, which is what they are doing.
And so the police end up saying that what they're going to do now is to deploy a lot more police to flood major stations and trains on the affected East Coast line and all over London and so on and so forth. But this is only going to last until Tuesday.
I mean, we know that this doesn't work from Germany.
Exactly.
It happens.
So performative.
Exactly.
Look at how the left has a tradition of saying the individuals are not an island into themselves.
Yep.
The same applies for trains and train stations. If the entire country within which these train stations and trains operate and exist is going down this road, this will affect also the trains. And just focusing on the trains and the stations is just micromanagement of decline.
It's just collective punishment of the innocent, i.e. the native people of this country, because the state let in millions and millions of people who shouldn't be here, wouldn't ask to be here, and now endanger us every day.
Yep. So the idiot shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philip, says that there should be a dramatic increase in stop and search to take far more of knives on the street. How about dramatic enforcement of the law or of immigration law or of things of that nature? Because think about it this way. This guy is supposedly British born. And you've had this flood of illegal migrants whose children are going to be called British born when they commit these kinds of crimes. Now, the parents of Anthony Williams may not have committed any crime. And may have been law-abiding. And this is what turned out. And if you see this flood of illegal migrants who are so accustomed to committing crime all the time, and then their children become British because they've been given asylum or they've given refugee or whatever it is, you can extrapolate
that the crime that is going to happen in the future is much more intense, frequent, and damaging. So this isn't a solution here. Then he calls for a rollout of live facial recognition cameras. London and Britain in general are probably the most surveyed societies in the world. There are cameras everywhere. Are they helping? Are they actually helping? Do you feel safe? I mean, the news that we covered was just from 31 October. Just news that was released on 31 October over about crimes that had been happening or that crimes that had happened.
Any law and any policy is as good as the will to enforce it.
Exactly.
So the number of cameras doesn't matter.
Exactly.
If there is no will to actually police the public.
Exactly. And if some groups refuse the legitimacy of the police and tell you that they're oppressed and that stop and search is racist and so on and so forth, they're telling you we're not going to integrate and this isn't going to work. Mm. So what are you wasting your time with instead of being honest about the problem? What are you wasting your time with?
Sorry, the only reason earlier on that I brought up the fact that I've obviously used that particular train journey so often, the Doncaster and London one, is also not so much to like highlight myself, but also it's, you know, if ever my sister comes down to London, you know, so that we can spend a day together or something, that's the line it gets. And it's like, if my family had just got that train for whatever reason,
I mean, you know, and it's like, the randomness of it is terrifying.
Right. And this is the thing. It's like you think, oh, it won't be, but it always surprises you.
Yep.
You always, Ariana Grande pop concerts, trains from London to Doncaster, wherever.
The DLR where he stabbed someone else.
Right.
A nightclub, a square.
There is nowhere.
Anything.
There are places that are more likely than others.
Yeah.
But that doesn't take away from the fact now that because of the sheer treachery of the establishment, no one is truly safe.
So let's hear very intelligent thoughts from Kemi Badenoch.
She ever had one.
Many people will be asking the same questions that I'm thinking of right now, which is, why is it that despite so much activity, so much done, legislation to ban knives, so much investment in mental health, so much more, we're seeing more and more violence on our streets? How can we protect ourselves? What is causing this? Lots of people will be speculating. I think we should wait until more facts emerge. But there's clearly something going wrong in our society right now.
Let's hear Kemi Badenoch's answer to what's going on. Thanks from Christ is King, somebody on X, a follower of ours. Thanks to the diaspora of the 70s, we are experiencing exactly what Badenoch has escaped. She says, I'm a child of the 1980s. Lagos was a place where almost everything seemed broken. She said at the 2024 International Democracy Union Forum in DC. At the Conservative Conference in 2024, she said her childhood in Nigeria was filled with tales of horror, characterized by screams of neighbors every night being attacked, leading to fears about whether her apartment would be the next target. So she knows what's causing this. She's lived this in the same way that I know the Lebanese Civil War, and I've lived this, and I understand what happens. She has, except that she's not being honest about her own experiences. Mm. And the litany of events that we saw just being publicized from 31 October until today kind of confirms that. Kind of confirms that you're hearing the screams of neighbors every night being attacked and wondering if you're going to be next. And this is deliberate government policy. This isn't an accident. Today I was doing research about the sort of next realpolitik that I'm doing in half an hour after the show, and I realized that the British government had created a program to settle the White Helmets in Britain. The White Helmets of Syria are literally medics affiliated with Al-Qaeda. They've gotten a permission to settle in Britain, and they're being brought into Britain. And the only person who sort of looks at this honestly is Rupert Lowe. He says thousands of small boats illegals are no longer technically asylum seekers. meaning that when their children commit attacks, they will be described as British-born. In the same way that Anthony Williams has been described as British-born. And he wrote to Keir Starmer, and I think I just want to read to you the first couple of sentences. Once again, our streets and our communities have been shattered by brutal, senseless, and barbaric violence. Britain did not used to be like this, nor does Britain have to be like this. We must not accept it as the new normal. Yes. But this is how normal it is. What was it? 10, 12 incidents? Mm. Just from 31 October till today? These are just the incidents publicized between 31 October till today. Not a representative sample, maybe, whatever. But pick any time period and do some research, and you'll see the exact same pattern. And what do we get from the government? Let's listen to John Healey. I think he's the defense secretary, saying very profound thoughts.
Can the public feel safe going about their business? Can the government say that with any degree of certainty right now?
Yes, the British public is resilient.
The British public is resilient, as in shut up and suffer. This is what it means. It means I will take no responsibility for the decisions of my government and its predecessors. The British public is resilient.
We're not going to be put off carrying on our everyday life. I'll be using that train service back home at the end of the week, just as I...
Presumably with security and armed security.
I do every week. But what I think the public should be is more vigilant for themselves, the circumstances around them. And of course, for all of us, we need to be more careful and more vigilant with many of our electronic devices and some of the cyber risks that we may also face.
Which means that there is no feeling of safety. And again, he speaks as if the problem is not violent crime, but people criticizing the policies that result in...
Absolutely.
You know, several years ago now, when Sadiq Khan says, it's just part and parcel of living in a big city, we've now finally arrived at the point where it's just part and parcel of living in Britain.
Yes. Yes,
pretty much. Just across the board, the entire nation.
Pretty much.
That's what it is.
Pretty
now.
Much. Be more vigilant. What does that mean? That means that you're not safe. If you're safe, you get to relax. This is one way of saying around certain people, never relax. That's what he's saying. Mm. He's also saying more of these people should be brought. That's the argument here. And Lewis Goodall, I couldn't sort of let this go. Here he's criticizing Matt Goodwin. Mm.
A friend texts from abroad this morning. He tweets 41 minutes ago, "What has happened to your country?" Three words, he says. Mass uncontrolled immigration. That's what's happened. I mean, for goodness sake. For goodness sake, this is absurd. We've just heard from the police that the two suspects are British nationals. They're both born in the United Kingdom. That's not immigration. That's people who are here. And these people basically...
You bloody moron.
Just sophistry.
You bloody moron. Their parents were immigrants. Mm. And it is an immigration story. Because certain communities are more prone to certain actions than others, and this finding is replicated in every single society that looks into it. There has never been a study that looked into this subject and didn't find the exact same thing.
Yes, I have to add two things here. First of all, he's a leftist. Leftists don't understand probability. They constantly talk about the possibility of crime. They don't understand probability of crime. That's why there was a guy on X who started saying, who posted news about a pedophile. And he was saying, look, he's white. Where is all the far right talking about
it? Yeah.
It's absolutely stupid and sophistic because, first of all, people who are right wingers, I'm not going to play along that stupid term that they're constantly using to talk about Mussolini and Millet in the same sentence. But right-wingers are almost invariably in favor of tough punishment. They're never soft on crime.
Exactly.
And when it comes to being against people who are committing crimes of this sort, the main line of thinking is, I don't want this to happen to my family. I don't want this to happen to my kids, to my community, to my friends, to people in my nation, and then
to reinforce your
humanity.
Point.
It's this shows that they only think in terms of groups, and it's absolutely disgusting.
To reinforce your point, if a white working class guy from an area that had been deindustrialized had done this, nobody would say that this is Margaret Thatcher's fault for deindustrialization and that therefore he should receive more lenient punishment.
Yeah.
Every white person would say, hang him.
The issue, though, is, which I'm going to tie again with possibility and probability that I said before, is that leftists are constantly going to say that, hey, it's white men who are, it's white British men who are committing crime as well. Yep. And they can commit crime, so don't just not talk about it. But they completely ignore the fact that crime isn't distributed evenly in communities.
No.
And the very fact that some communities are overrepresented in violent crime is a problem in and of itself.
Correct.
And people like Lewis Goodall, they just want to refuse to talk about it.
Well, can I just say one more thing about this Lewis Goodall business as well, which is just the fact that whilst Lewis Goodall proceeds to just go on LBC or news agents or whatever it is with Maitlis and the rest of those cronies every day and basically just parrot the establishment line, more people are going to die.
Yes.
This is not the last time we're going to report this. And this is what is...
Die or get raped or get their lives destroyed.
All number. And so whilst Lewis is there busy saying things that make him feel good, that make him feel moral... He is supporting a system that, as we've pointed out, actually says, we don't have a solution to deal with this because there isn't a liberal solution to deal with this. And therefore, you're not going to be safe, but you're resilient, aren't you? So stiff upper lip and all that, you know, because you're British. Now go out there, get on the train, and potentially run into some foreigner who we've let in the country that shouldn't be here, or their children, or so on and so forth.
And the last word from the establishment on this, women afraid to be out in public after racially aggravated rapes. But this is talking about the two alleged incidents where Indian women were allegedly raped because of their skin color or where it was part of the thinking. Mm. It has nothing to do with the grooming gangs or with the violence from migrants or what have you. But this is what the BBC is worried about. And this is the kind of narrative that's being pushed by the BBC, that you are the enemy. And the only conclusion is that they want you to suffer, that this is deliberate policy intended to test your resilience and break your resilience until you submit and have the total police state that they dream of. This is insane. This is insane. And it's deliberate. And it's evil. And that's what I want to close with.
Right. So before we go to the comments, could you please show the first link?
Yes.
Right. For everyone watching, Firas is going to have an episode of Realpolitik.
Yep.
At 3 p.m. You're going to talk about the Syrian civil war, part two.
So, yes, sir.
Definitely, if you are already a subscriber, definitely watch what Firas has to say. It's a great, great series. And also, if you're not, consider subscribing to our channel with as little as £5 a month. And definitely give Realpolitik a watch, and also watch Chronicles by Luca.
Sure, thank you.
Right, let's go to the comments.
Sure.
Robert White for £10. Not only the whole idea of blank slate. I think it is also they decided that this is the moral thing to do. It has to succeed, so they have to ignore any negative consequences. It's very naive. I mean,
I wouldn't attribute to them that much good intentions. I'm just over that. Mm. I'm just over saying, oh, they're naive, they're misguided. No. They see you suffer and they don't give a damn. And that's evil.
You can be naive and misguided for 6 months. You can't be naive and misguided for 30 years.
Exactly. That's it.
Gimli of Gloin for €10 says, I think Elon had a point when he said that the people of the UK need to finally stand up for the country. Otherwise, you might not have a country to fight for any longer.
Yep.
I mean, people need to express their dissatisfaction with his policies. Doubter for £4.99. The leftists who spread anti-English hatred are culpable when regarded people act on it. It is MK Ultra in action. Every accusation is a confession. M. Salim, thumbs up. Thank you. Henry Ashman for £10. I can't get over the language being used by the authorities. The incidents are described as if they're inevitable, akin to natural disaster. Where is the fury? Where is the full force of the law?
Yep.
I mean, the force of the law is always proportional to the will to enforce it. And
the will to enforce it is dependent on the identity
and
of the criminal.
Yep. And also, I really like what Henry says about this, because when they are describing it precisely as a natural disaster, as something that no human being has moral responsibility for,
exactly.
And therefore something that, you know, just sort of tries to give an excuse for the public, for the police to not do much.
Man dies after a knife attack.
Right. So White Rose Republic for £2. A new hospital is Templars needed more than ever.
Yep.
Right, and then go to Cranky Texan for £10. Mass migration is a key part of the plan to collapse Western currencies in order to usher in central bank digital currency and a social credit control system. They need the debt to usher in the crisis. The Habsification says,
welcome to the UK, where anarcho-tyranny has become the norm. Being law-abiding is a risk because low-impulse control migrants that could barely string a sentence together have been let in. Yeah.
That's a random name. The government doesn't need to keep us safe. It needs to uphold the law and enact swift, brutal justice on evildoers. But they won't do that because our rulers are the most evil of the lot. I will say this because I do regularly find upon, encounter this argument. No, part of upholding the law involves keeping people safe.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean that this has to go to ridiculous extent of a police state. It means that some people have to go, yes. And the law has to be enforced. A drunk changeling, open quote, it's not terrorism, black people are just like that, close quote, is a cope so based that only an anti-racist could come up with it. Whatever. The Matt D, I'll call it now, knife did it, can no longer buy unless you have digital ID. It was just a man, and survivors will be investigated and charged with fair evasion.
Yeah, man, it's a completely sick. Yeah,
it's exactly what I said a moment ago. Protecting the public and ensuring public safety shouldn't go to the to that extent. It should take the form of, you know, people who are not able to live here should leave. That's, and also the law should be enforced, and there should be no soft on crime policies.
No. All right then. So let's all just cast our minds back to the ancient history that was June, shall we? Where we had in the United States. Now this might seem deceptive. I know this looks like Mexico with the Mexican flag, but of course this was actually in California, where all the crazies live. And so these people were very, very proud of the fact that they were Mexicans, and they were very, very brave in resisting Trump and ICE and their attempts to basically make California
American again?
A livable place again. Mm-hmm. And yes, part of being a livable place would be for it to actually be American. And so you can tell they have a tremendous amount of loyalty to their own nation, whether they be first generation, second generation immigrant. Who knows? Who cares? The point is they make it very clear as to where their loyalties are, which is to Mexico. So let's talk about Mexico, shall we, and see what a great place it is. Now, I'm going to start by just playing this clip, and then we'll talk about it. It's not graphic, but it is from the event. And so the sound of those shots was the sound of the assassination of Carlos Manzo, who was the mayor of a city called, sorry, its pronunciation, Uruapan, in Mexico, which was the second largest city in its region. Now, Manzo seems to have been something of a genuine crusader. He seems to have had, from what I can tell, a strong moral compass, certainly so far as it entails basically fighting the cartels, which is, of course, the largest issue facing Mexico. So large now that, honestly, there doesn't even seem to be a way out of it for the near future.
No.
This is going to be a decades-long dilemma. And just to say something else about the fact of how Carlos Manzo came to power, he was originally part of the Moreno party, of the current president's party, Sheinbaum, and he was passed over basically to become their party's representative for the mayor of this region. Mm-hmm. And so he ran as an independent. And not only did he run as an independent, he managed to basically get 66% of the votes cast. And that is against a coalition of Morena, PT, and Green Party. So they all put a coalition in against him, and they managed to accrue 19.44% of the votes.
Wow.
So that tells us something very, very clear about this man, which is that he, off the back of his name, his reputation, his moral character, he had enough confidence from the local people of Europe that they were basically willing to put their faith in him. And they knew that he was obviously incorruptible. Now, he has been compared to to a Bukele-like figure, mm-hmm. although he has distanced himself from that. He says, I'm not Bukele. He says, I'm just a guy who wears a hat. And really, what we come to is the fact that he really led courageously. So one of the things that is most important to note is that whilst there were patrols around his area where he has jurisdiction, he would personally go out on these patrols with his men in his bulletproof vest, and he led from the front, right? He inspired other people to take a stand, to be brave in the face of this corruption and in the face of the fear, right? Just the sheer fear. Because the fact of the matter is that for many of these gangs, it doesn't have to be that they are simply around every corner. You can see them always visible in plain sight, knowing that they're going to just pull a gun out and end your life.
Yep.
They rule through fear, through their reputation alone, through the sheer barbarity and precedent of what they've done. These are some of the most brutal people that probably walk the earth right now.
Yes.
To be honest with you.
Yes.
On par with the most, you know, isolated African warlords.
There was a point where you couldn't, unless you knew what you were doing, you couldn't tell apart videos of cartel brutality mm-hmm. and videos of Islamic State brutality.
Yeah.
And very often the cartels were more brutal than Islamic State.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how evil they are. It should be said that when Gloria Sheinbaum was mayor of Mexico City, which was the stepping stone to her becoming president, she did bring the murder rate down in Mexico City. Mm. How did she do that? Well, the disappearance rate increased dramatically. So the cartels began disappearing bodies rather than leaving bodies in order to help her claim that she brought down the murder rate.
I genuinely don't want to seem glib, but this is literally the plot of Hot Fuzz. Just hide the bodies to hide the statistics.
Yep.
And that's treated as like a comedy, like an absurd comedy.
Yes. Yes. And it's part of the plot of The Wire.
Yeah.
So the extent of corruption there is insane. Her predecessor and ideological godfather, AMLO, López Obrador was his last name. His policy was that we would use hugs, not bullets, on the cartels. By which he meant that the cartels would be brought into the legal economy and therefore be allowed to launder their money in the hope that they'd reduce their violence.
Just the hope.
In the hope, yes.
Right. Who believes this?
And it turns out that the people who believe this are people on the payroll of the Jalisco cartel, which is the cartel that Carlos Manzo was campaigning against. And it seems that, according to the Americans, López Obrador was being paid by the Jalisco cartel or by the Juarez cartel. I'm not sure. One of the two.
Mm.
So he was actually on their payroll, and then they do the service to Sheinbaum, or the Americans say he was on their payroll, and then they do the service to Sheinbaum by reducing the number of murders. And her continued policy is to try to corrupt the Mexican military. So what she does is that she comes up with new economic projects in transport and tourism that she hands over to the army, finding a way essentially to bribe the generals and to end the policy of her predecessor, Vicente Fox, I think, who was using the military to crack down on the cartels.
Yeah.
And she ended that policy by essentially ensuring that the top generals would be on the payroll of the cartels. So this is a full-on narco state at this stage.
Mm.
And she's enabling this, and she will continue to do this. And then you see in exchange that 37 of her opponents have died at the hands of the cartels. Coincidence, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, it was, I believe I'm right in saying it was the bloodiest election without precedent that actually that she emerged to power with. So I have a few quotes here from Manzo where he goes on to say, "I have no dealings, no relationship, no financing or anything with the crime groups. I don't compromise." A statement that seemed to say that compromise, negotiating, conceding, entering the game was the unwritten rule to stay afloat in one of the hottest areas of Mexico. And he also went on to say that fear is natural to man, but we dominate it. We don't let it paralyze us. And he also seemed to believe that because of his public image and his popularity and the fact that he obviously had quite strong media presence, that they wouldn't dare go after him.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to have made the calculation that basically people power would make him untouchable.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously that's not something they care about. And what's more as well, the most horrific detail of all of this is obviously, so this assassination took place on Saturday when Mexico was hosting the Day of the Dead festival. And he was there in the center of his city, great public festivities, and he was with his son as he was shot down. So murdered right in front of his son. It's awful. So I did think it was worth reading what the president of Mexico had to say about all of this, which is that I condemn with absolute firmness the vile assassination of the municipal president of Europen, Carlos Manzo. I express my most sincere condolences to his family and loved ones, as well as to the people of Europen in the face of this irreparable loss. From the moment this grave incident became known, I spoke with the governor of Michoacán, thank you, and the Secretary of Security and Citizen Protection, Omar Garcia Harfuch.
Lebanese.
Who has maintained constant communication with the State Attorney General. Today, I convened the Security Cabinet to ensure support for that place, and that there be no impunity. The territorial commands of defense and the National Guard maintain communication with the mayor, and he had federal protection. The Security Cabinet will hold a press conference to transparently report on the progress of the investigation of this case. From the start of this administration, we have strengthened the security strategy. These such regrettable events drive us to strengthen it even further. We reaffirm our commitment to devote all our efforts to the state to achieve peace and security with zero impunity and justice. You look skeptical, Firas.
She's on their payroll. I mean, doing her this favor of hiding the bodies in Mexico City is not only evil that families don't know where their loved ones are. It shows that they're in cahoots. And her predecessor was all about hugs, not bullets. These people are evil, man.
They are. And what's more as well, that really the investigation, of course, simply seems to be centered on, well, who killed him?
Right.
Just who killed him? No larger questions about where the money was coming from, where the incentive came from, who could gain from it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a very suspicious statement. And what's more as well, there is also the fact to contend with that Manzo was totally opposed to the Hughes policy.
Right.
He believed in just
bullets.
Reality, hard power.
Yes, you have to kill cartel members, guys.
He believed in this, and he seems to have been practically begging Sheinbaum and her administration for several months now,
right,
to bring in troops to his place, so to give him reinforcements to actually deal with this. And no such reinforcements arrived. No helping hand was given.
I mean, Michoacán is one of the states that I believe is close to Mexico City.
Mm.
And the cartels are working on essentially surrounding Mexico City, as well as the northern states close to the United States, in order to make sure that the Mexican state doesn't have any options.
Mm.
And they're not going to be dealt with hugs. They're going to have to be dealt with bullets, many bullets, preferably in the head. And this is just madness.
And what's more as well, this assassination, obviously, because as I said, the guy was popular. And so what we have here are protests, riots, demonstrations happening outside of, is it Morelia, in the Moreno government palace. I'll just play. So you can see him climbing through the window there, and then you have it from the other side in this video. So the point here is not the actual conduct of the people, but rather the fact that they clearly believe
that it was the government.
That it was the government.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
They this is not some... This is like the most open secret, right, of all time. And so whilst the state seems to deny it, obviously the Mexican people seem to be smarter than that. I mean,
and
God knows me speculating on what will happen in Mexican politics when the next election runs around. There are far too many unknown quantities.
Elections
for all of
don't
that.
Matter.
No.
That's the thing. Elections don't matter.
The gangs win every time.
Exactly. And the gangs are gaining more and more influence in the United States. And, you know, one of my theories, and it'll come out in next week's Realpolitik about Antifa, is that they're beginning to fund American groups in order to encourage them to become more violent. So the cartels are a huge problem, much bigger problem than Venezuela or anywhere else.
I think I have a link missing here, but I was going to comment on the fact as well that Landau, the Deputy Secretary for State Department in America, obviously put out a statement basically acknowledging that this had happened and saying that they were monitoring the situation very, very closely. Because the fact of the matter is that a huge number of public officials are obviously being killed. And what's more as well, this is not simply something as zealous as basically an anarcho state existing on the doorstep of America. What's more, it's also the fact that the cartels, according to Homeland Security, have been putting out bounties on ICE officers.
Yep.
Right, so you have this entire, not just bounties, but a tier list. So you have $2,000 for gathering intelligence or doxing agents, including photos of their family and details.
And you have also politicians saying that ICE agents shouldn't be wearing masks.
Yes.
Yeah. You also, so $5,000 to $10,000 for kidnapping on non-lethal assaults on these officers, and up to $50,000 for assassination of high-ranking officials. Now, shockingly, the Mexican government denied that such a thing was happening and said that this was the first they'd heard of it. But I actually am willing to trust Homeland Security on this. I think that, put it this way, I don't think this is morally beneath the cartels.
No.
to do such a thing. I think we have a pretty clear view of what their character is. And so when it actually brings American lives into stake as well, obviously that will bring about questions of, will the United States intervene in Mexico? Mm-hmm. Will it put boots on the ground? Now, I don't want to put too much stock, of course, in a NBC article. The point is, it does raise that speculative question.
Yep.
Because what's more as well, we have to remember, to go back to the start of this segment, that these Mexican loyalists that live in California, they are obviously wishing to expand
yes.
their own culture, their own country's interests. And at this point, Mexico's interests are simply, aligned with whatever the gang's interests are. And so if they spread Mexico into the United States through sheer demographic replacement, then that only serves to strengthen these gangs as well. And what's more, above 90% of drugs within the United States pass by the land border
yep.
in Mexico. Fentanyl, cocaine, marijuana, all of it. It's a ridiculously high number. And so there is a huge amount of contention here. And it's obviously deeply upsetting that good men suffer, their families are rendered fatherless and husbandless, and the corruption seems to spread at every stage, unchecked. And so I only hope that whatever the Trump administration devises, whatever advice it is seeking, it can do something to obviously curb this. Because what is apparent is that the solution to fix this is not going to come from within Mexico itself.
No.
When the cartels have the entire government in its pocket and basically rules by a state of, by a reign of terror.
Yep.
Right. So George Lloyd for £5 says, so AMLO was basically channeling David Cameron and his Hug a Hoodie.
Mm.
Dreadnought Logan for $5 says, during the 70s, my mom's entire life, all 14 of them, had to flee Mexico City because the cartels wanted my grandfather to be their drug mule. I hope that now you're much better state than you and your family. Don Browning for $10. The odds of any of us are increasingly not in our favor.
Yeah.
And could we scroll up a bit, please? Yeah, Tom for £10. Was on a train the other week. Someone up front was hammering the emergency button. Everyone in the carriage I was in at the back was having a panic attack, assuming that something had happened.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ochigdor for $5 in current British politics would sign shop saying no criminals allowed, be called racist. Right, that's for the previous one.
Yep.
Now, the Habsification says the cartels are playing a dangerous game, especially with Trump in government. Expect indiscriminate drone strikes. Again, Habsification says, sadly, the corruption is bottom-up and has infected the police and the military a long time ago. The only solution is to bring in mercenaries, PMCs, for any leader in Mexico to deal with the cartels. I don't know if he means top-down, but maybe... Right, okay. That's a random name, says, I agree, Stelios. The problem is that the people in charge are evil and will always use our suffering as an excuse to tyrannize us more.
Yep.
Right, so let's go to the third segment. Right, so I'm going to talk about a very sad subject. It's an atrocity. It's the genocide of Christians in Africa, and particularly in Sudan and Nigeria. Now, I have done a segment before about the persecution of Christians in Africa and the relative, lack of care by the international community, and especially the UN, about 11 months ago. So if you want to have a look, just go and watch this. Today we're going to talk a bit about Sudan and then Nigeria. But what I want to say is that it seems to me that there are double standards with respect to the reporting of crimes committed according to some communities. And let me just be very clear. We constantly hear about, let's say, Islamophobia and antisemitism, but we do not hear about Christianophobia. Mm-hmm. We do not have a specific UN day, for instance, that is given for and assigned for crimes against Christians. There is a day against Islamophobia. There is a day against antisemitism. There is a day against religious persecution and for religious freedoms, but there isn't a specific day, again, for commemoration, for instance, of the crimes against, not the commemoration, the condemnation of crimes against Christians. It's almost as if the focus is disproportionately on the antisemitism and Islamophobia side, and not on the anti-Christian side. And here we have Hillel Neuer, who says, massive protests in London, Paris, Amsterdam, Columbia University over new revelations that Sudan civil war last year caused 61,000 dead in Khartoum alone, many from starvation. And obviously, it's empty spaces. Mm-hmm. And let me also just say that when it came to protests against the operation of the IDF in Gaza, there were many people who flew the Palestinian flags. Now we don't see them. This doesn't mean that crimes in Gaza don't continue to happen. They do. But the riots and the protests have stopped.
Yep.
I don't know. My speculation is that most probably these protests were funded by a side that was basically more anti-Jewish. It wasn't a pro-human rights side, because there continue to be crimes in Gaza, but we don't see these people. Right, and we do see here someone going to children in Sudan and explaining to them what happens in Gaza, which is, I think it's a bit weird. Let me just put it this way. He goes and he tells children in Sudan what's happening in Gaza. Now,
what does he expect the African children to do about it, even by his own standards?
Well, do you know, the important thing in this is what you don't notice, which is the camera. Mm. And he doesn't care whether they understand him or not. He cares about the fact that he is virtue signaling to the people who are going to watch it and are going to think that they are in his side. Right, so we have, sadly, some new developments in the Sudanese civil war, and one of the last ones, because they have massive instability since 1956. And right now, most of these crimes are located here in this area called Al-Fashir, which is in the southwest area where it's close to the Christian side of Sudan, because they're saying that basically the north is more Muslim majority and most of the Christians are in the south. Right, and let's see here what the Daily Mail has to say. Humanity at its worst. 2,000 civilians executed in the last 48 hours. This was published on November 1st. They're saying 460 massacred at a maternity hospital. Husbands forced to hear wives being raped for days. Horrifying accounts of how Sudan has descended into hell. And
I just want to point out that a lot of people in the current government were calling for opening the door to migration from Sudan and to providing safe passage to people from Sudan so that they could move to Britain. One thing to note here. Yeah, please continue.
Right, and they say here the United Nations had described it as a war of atrocities, yet the brutalities of the Sudanese civil war were almost forgotten by the world until now. And because there was this operation of the RSF in El Fasher, the Rapid Support Forces, which is a paramilitary force, there have been new atrocities that are documented. I'm not going to show you the atrocities, but they have basically flooded the social media They have flooded social media, and you see invariably people being massacred. Most of them are Christians, not all of them, because it's a ethno-religious conflict. It's an incredibly messy conflict, but you definitely see lots of violent murderers killing them, filming themselves killing them, and shouting that their God is great.
To be fair, it's not particularly religious right now in Sudan. It was much more religious in the previous war between what is today Sudan and what is today South Sudan, where South Sudan was more both Christian and animist and all kinds of other things. And the Muslim side would sort of be completely butchering people.
Now it's
sort of less religious.
Doesn't it also have a huge religious dimension when they film themselves basically killing people and they proudly make their religious chants?
I don't know how to make this worse, but I will. The RSF, the force involved here, are the somewhat more secular force compared to the Sudanese military, who has been closer to the Islamists because of their background. So it's not that much of a religious thing, and it's not accurate to call the RSF particularly Islamist. They are being backed by the UAE against what they fear is Islamist influence.
Well, don't they also have those support from Islamist sides and other countries?
Everybody sees themselves as a jihadi in one way or another. Mm. Every Muslim warrior.
So if they see themselves as such, isn't it something to be... Why can't we just say it's a secular issue alone?
Because it's a little bit messier than that.
Okay.
It's a little bit messier than
that. Right, so there are tons of videos that have flooded and they are all incredibly distressing, and you see... really, humanity at its worst.
Yeah.
You don't just see people suffering, you see people who make them suffer, and they proudly announce it throughout the whole world, and they do frequently make their religious chants, and I think that it is particularly disturbing. And this was a particular incident here where this has gone around the world. This is a mother begging for her children, and they are harassing her and terrorizing her and her children. And according to reports, the children were taken away and she was killed. And we do see a relative silence on the part of the international community against this. And I think, personally, I think that there is also a religious aspect into it. And I will... add to what Firas was saying before, there have been also reports that the victims aren't just Christians, but I do think that there is a massive anti-Christian aspect into it, especially when all the people who are committing these atrocities are gloating and they are shouting that their God is great and they're doing it for religious purposes. Right, so let us have this... So a few bullet points to understand what is happening in Sudan. This is from an article from the BBC that has been recently updated. Mm. But basically, they're saying this because this is an ongoing thing, basically. There is massive instability in Sudan since 1956. I believe there have been around 20 coups.
Something like that.
It's basically how you don't govern a country.
Decolonization just led to... total instability, and actually, we should have kept hold of it.
Kept hold of it, and it should have been governed from Egypt. If you were going to decolonize it, it should have been governed from Egypt.
Mm.
Because they are fundamental. I mean, I think that there are more bridges in parts of London than in the entirety of Sudan, a country that's sort of bisected by the Nile River, and the more inhabited areas have even more.
Mm.
And so, if you're not able to build a bridge across a river, then you're not able to do very much. And the corollary is, please can we not discuss bringing them to Europe? Please can we sort of, if you're going to be humanitarian, go be humanitarian there.
The point is that there's a limit to how much help you can give when we're talking about a continent that is vastly overpopulated relative to Europe. And the point is that there are all these issues that we are talking about, and I believe that they are valid concerns, because one of the last you can only help people when your house is in order.
Yes. Mm.
If your house replicates the problematic houses, then you can't help anyone.
No.
Right. So basically what happens in a nutshell is that they had 30 years of a president called Omar al-Bashir, and he governed Sudan from 1989 to 2019. And in 2019, he fell by a coup. And that coup was basically organized by two major groups. The one was the Sudanese military forces, commanded by the general Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. And again, yes, I will give you that. This doesn't sound a particularly Christian name, yes. The head of the armed forces and, in effect, the country's president. And then his deputy, RSF leader, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, better known as Hemedti. And at some point, they diverged because the General Burhan and General Dagalo disagreed on the direction the country was going. And the main sticking points were the plans to incorporate the 100,000 strong RSF into the army, and that would lead then into a new force, and that's where they sort of
So just to add a bit of detail here, Omar al-Bashir was something of color revolutioned.
Yeah,
he was subjected to a color revolution of sorts, partly, and as always with these things, partly because the public was genuinely angry, and partly because there was foreign intervention to get rid of him, because he was too close to the Muslim Brotherhood and too close to Hezbollah and Iran. And so a coalition of countries worked together to sort of overthrow him and get rid of him. And they did so successfully. But one of the main men involved is this guy, Dagalo or Hemedti. And this guy had been responsible for a previous genocide in Darfur. And he's always been a genocidal maniac. He led a force called the Janjaweed, who went around just murdering people left and right, hundreds of thousands of people murdered, in partnership with the Sudanese military, in partnership with Bashir. Mm. And then he saw an opening and he turned on Bashir. And then him and his ally, who worked together, turned on each other over who becomes boss.
Yeah.
Burhan wanted to incorporate the RSF into the army. Hemedti wanted to keep his forces independent and subject to his own tribal control. And the war in Libya obviously helped enormously because it allowed Hemedti to become a lot richer, but through human smuggling and through gold smuggling, in partnership and with sometimes the Russians and the Emiratis and others.
And they say that the UAE denies this, and also that he has the backing of General Haftar in Libya.
Yes.
Right. So I think we can sort of draw an idea of where this coalition comes from and what its goals are.
There hadn't been a color revolution, and if Gaddafi had been kept in place, a lot of this murderousness wouldn't be happening.
And here I'm going to mention the Open Doors organization, which I kind of recommend enough. Definitely visit their website. They were talking about the persecution of Christians around the world, and they have particularly strong points to make about Sudan and Nigeria, which we will talk about in a minute. They're saying here basically that Sudan is one of the worst places to be a Christian. It scores 90 out of 100 in their prosecution level meter, and they're saying basically that there has been a spike in the abduction and killing of Christian men by radical Islamic groups, and that the civil war, although the civil war is on paper and in some respects a conflict that isn't specifically Christian, frequently Christians are collateral damage. Mm-hmm. And many of these very violent groups are using the status, are using the, let's say, opportunities that they see themselves as having to commit atrocities against Christians.
The thing is as well, to go back to your one of your original points about the protests yeah. that we've had across London in recent days, obviously, as we both know, there are, as you've chronicled, you know, a lot with Realpolitik and like the Muslim Brotherhood. And, you know, these are, whether it's, you know, like Israel and the Zionists or whether it's the Islamists on the other side, these are people with a lot of money who are using it all around the world for their own purposes. I don't see this from the Christians.
No.
That where is the Christian lobbying groups? Where is the money? Where is the power
yes.
to defend Christians around the world?
Yes.
And Open Doors also says here, why are Christians persecuted in Sudan? And they have two bullet points that I think are particularly indicative. They're saying in Sudan's ongoing conflict, both sides have seen the rise of Islamic extremists. Correct. They're capitalizing on the chaotic security situation to increase their attacks on churches and Christian communities seeking to destroy Christianity in Sudan. So even if someone can make the argument that the conflict on its own is not a particularly religious one, it seems that there are many Christians who are sort of being sandwiched between both sides, and they are...
One Iraqi bishop... when the Christians in Iraq were being attacked, made an excellent point, which is that Christians only know how to live in a law-abiding society where there is order, and where there is, and even if the order is brutal, where there is disorder, they don't thrive because they're constantly the victims of attack. And this is half the point, because the other half must be that Christians must impose order on the world, as they are commanded by God to do.
You look at, if I may, you look at like a piece of literature like Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness, and you just see how actually when European man descends into the Heart of Darkness, both, you know, metaphorically and geographically, goes into Africa, the cultural norms and means to enforce power mm-hmm. of those societies is so rudimentary that what it ends up doing is basically working as a moral vacuum and just dragging, like, the you know, the more civilized races down into that gutter as well, because the African nations have no spirit of democracy, no allegiance to such ideals. It is might makes right.
Yes,
and
very much
so yeah. this is how they understand yeah. things.
And also the genocide of Christians in these countries doesn't have to be necessarily the first and the only goal of
yes,
these in
exactly.
the, of each side in these conflicts, but it's one of the collateral damages. And we have here from the Spectator of Australia an article that says, while every incident in Gaza is immediately placed at the top of world headlines, often repeated endlessly, even before full verification, Sudan's humanitarian catastrophe is relegated to the margins of international coverage.
Yes.
Many of the world's major media outlets, influenced by globalist institutions and left-leaning Western narratives, follow a selective approach in reporting human suffering. When a story aligns with Western regional politics, sympathy and attention surge. But when the victims are Africans, poor communities, or non-Muslims, silence replaces images and headlines.
Correct.
And here we're going to talk about Nigeria and Trump's comments about it briefly. Again, from Open Doors, we have basically the claim that the persecution of Christians in Nigeria is basically the worst throughout the world. And they're saying, according to their research, more Christians are killed for their faith in Nigeria than in the rest of the world combined. Jihadist violence continues to escalate in Nigeria. Christians are at particular risk from targeted attacks by Islamic militant groups, including Fulani militants, Boko Haram, and ISWAP, which stands for Islamic State West Africa Province. And they're saying these attacks are shockingly brutal in nature. Many believers are killed, particularly men, while women are often kidnapped and targeted for sexual violence. And I'm not going to describe the atrocities that I read during the last weekend.
May I interject briefly here?
Yes, of course.
There's a strategy there that's being pursued by Islamic State, and there's a Russia element and a United States element. The strategy is
for Islamic State, they're trying to work particularly on the Fulani, who are a tribe in that region that extends all over West Africa, and they're a minority tribe. Because they're a minority tribe, their tribal cohesion, even though they're huge, allows them to rule over the other disparate tribes in a very effective way. And so Islamic State has been working to recruit them and to incorporate them into its forces. And this would give them a full desert highway all over the Sahara Desert, meaning that they would gain freedom of movement between the Sahel region on the sort of southern part of West Africa all the way to Arab North Africa. And they'd be able to operate throughout that area. The Americans and their allies pretty much failed in dealing with this threat. So the Russians stepped in and helped Mali and Burkina Faso and a bunch of other countries and Niger to try to get them to stop the spread of this militancy from Nigeria to the rest of the region and from Libya to the rest of the region. And remember, the overthrow of Gaddafi very much enabled Islamic State to expand there. So they've worked hard to sort of create this network across the desert where they can pop up in any part of either Arab North Africa or Black West Africa and conduct their attacks and have pretty much freedom of movement from Mauritania to Sudan, all over. This is the agenda. Now Trump is trying to reinsert the Americans into this conversation by focusing on Nigeria and by focusing on the atrocities on Christians in Nigeria, which are a full genocide, unlike sort of in Sudan, it's a little more nuanced than that. But there is also a geopolitical element to it, which is to compete with the Russians and to reassert American influence on that region, because the French and the Americans under previous administrations had completely failed to control this.
And Trump here says basically Christianity is facing an existential threat in Nigeria. Thousands of Christians are being killed. Radical Islamists are responsible for the mass slaughter. I'm hereby making Nigeria a country of particular concern. And says, but that's the least of it. When Christians or any such group is slaughtered like is happening in Nigeria, something must be done. I'm asking Congressman Riley Moore, together with Chairman Tom Cole and the House Appropriations Committee, to immediately look into this matter and report back to me. It says basically the United States cannot stand by while such atrocities are happening in Nigeria and numerous other countries. We stand ready, willing, and able to save our great Christian population around the world. And he signs. Yes, and I think it's a good way to end the segment by focusing on what Trump said. We will see what comes afterwards. I want to say before, because maybe my point was a bit misunderstood. I fully accept that these conflicts are messier than the Christian side versus the non-Christian side. But what I think is a fair thing to say is that even if there are much messier than that, and you could say that both sides are in many respects anti-Christian, Christians get killed in the process as collateral damage. And these conflicts are sort of providing an extra opportunity in lots of these savages' minds to go and kill people. And they are not killing only Christians, but they seem to be doing it, and especially when they're doing it accompanying this with religious chants, I think it's a fair thing to say that
I agree.
There is a religious component in it.
Yes,
right. So I don't see any comment here. So let's go to the videos if we have. Samson, do we have any video?
That's right, he's just scrolling it. Yep. Cheers, Samson.
Great. I see Alex Ogle. I haven't watched a video of his in a long time.
Since people are talking about Halo again, I think it's pertinent to observe that the Covenants are actually fairly similar to how our globalist elite class probably view their, you know, overarching project. Remember, the Covenant are basically a multicultural coalition of species who are all jockeying for position over each other within a system, although they are kind of ruled over by, like, a priestly overcast in the form of the prophets, who kind of run all the technology and ideology. But the thing is, they're actually a very inefficient and kind of stagnant empire, but they have so much mass at this point, and they've got enough technology from their early days of their empire that it can kind of roll over any problem as long as they're bigger than it. Honestly, this whole thing could be do with a good roundtable and a Lotus Eater.
Thank you.
Cool. Will. Unfortunately, I don't know too much about the Halo lore. I did play 3 and Reach, you know, back in the good old days when I had Xbox Live with my friends after school, but I don't know too much about the lore. Probably end up revisiting it at some point, though.
Yeah, we'll pass on the idea. Let's go to the next video.
I was in my hometown of Glasgow last week, and I couldn't help but notice how bad the area around George Square looked, which is currently being redeveloped. This is meant to be the city's focal point. Some streets around it look bad in places too. What must tourists think? The city chambers aren't even illuminated at night. SNP runs the council, and it shows.
Yep.
Those hardcore nationalists don't seem to care much for Glasgow. Who'd have thought it?
Nope.
On my father's side of the family, we've had quite a history of Methodism, which led to me being sent to a Methodist secondary school in mid-Devon. I'm not sure they did a very good job at conveying the Methodist form of Christianity, but the basics were there. I don't want much of an inheritance from my parents, but one thing they have that I would like handed down is a beautiful leather-bound illustrated copy of John Bunyan's The Pilgrim's Progress. 27 years ago, I bought my own copy and read it. I reread it recently, and some 30-second book clubs will follow.
That's excellent.
That is a gorgeous
I'm
book.
I'm really looking forward
that
to it, Alex.
That is beautiful looking copy. Great.
Let's go to the next one. Zesty King.
Hey, Lotus Eaters. I'm in one of the oldest churches in England. I'm in Eastcombe in County Durham. A lot of it was made using old Roman material. And you can see here the arch with the original Roman paintings on it. Looks very nice. And at the altar here, there's an Anglo-Saxon cross. This is what it looks like from the outside. And this is the oldest sundial in Britain.
Hmm. That's extraordinary. I'll have to visit myself at some point, no doubt.
Beautiful.
Right. Should we go to the comments for us?
Yes, sure.
Do you want to read some of yours?
I'll start with Sophie Liv. Yesterday, I realized something. I am never going to visit England by myself again. The only way for me to visit England is with the companionship of one of my male friends. And even then, I'm not going to London or Birmingham and will only go to other places if I have a specific reason to go. I used to travel to London once every third or second year to watch West End shows and enjoy historical sites. I have not gone in 8 and will not be going again. That's just so sad. Yeah, I agree completely. Henry Ashman says, okay, so I'm more vigilant and I clock someone about to go stabbing, then what? There's only so far you can run away from that, and it's illegal to have pretty much anything on you to defend yourself with. Being vigilant just means I know I'm going to die before everyone else realizes. It's just disgusting, frankly. Baron von Warhawk says, I know you hate these stabbers and groomers with a passion, but remember, the cops, politicians, lawyers, and judges are your true enemy, for it is their fault that these criminals are in control in the first place. They will move heaven and earth to keep terrorists and rapists in your country while punishing anyone who tries to prevent them from destroying England. Mm-hmm. A traitor is always worse than the barbarian at the gate, i.e., could not agree more. I could not agree more. Yeah. Black Caribbean British man born in the UK. Was it Lenny Henry? Thanks for that. Sven says, had to give a police statement at the hospital last night after being attacked by a dog. PC said that they were checking CCTV. Happened on a suburban side street and the expectation was just that there would be CCTV. Most surveilled society ever. Yeah. Yeah, it's really terrible. Hector Rex says, I remember NYC did something similar and put the National Guard in the subway, but doesn't stop the crime. You need to remove criminals from society, either through imprisonment or cessation of life. Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. Mexico State, you want to read a couple?
From my segment, Lord Inquisitor Hector Rex says, the terrible thing is that remittances from the United States fund a large amount of Mexico's economy, tax those remittances into oblivion and make them collapse or stop the cartels. Well, it would certainly help.
Yes, it would definitely help.
This is the other thing as well, you know, these people... Mexican loyalists in the United States as well. It's like, right, I'm sure you're very proud of your food and your festivals, right? But actually, around the world now, your country is most infamous for what's currently happening to it,
yep.
Right? And rather than address that with any amount of bravery, with the bravery that Carlos Manzo exhibited,
yep.
You instead decide to... just stay in the United States, watching your own country across the border just fall into decline, while simultaneously cheering for it as if it's in some way superior to the United States itself.
Yeah,
everything about it is just so morally perverse.
Yes.
Gabriel says, Democrats in Congress would never sign off on a war with the Mexican cartels. That would be the death of 99% of their illegal immigrant voter laundering operations.
And a lot of their funding. If you look at Act Blue and the way that they're receiving money, I cover it in next week's Realpolitik. Watch that.
Okay. And I'll just read one more from mine, which is AZ Desert Rat, who says, the cartels have been controlling Mexico and its government for decades. For the life of me, I can't figure out why anyone would want to import that to the United States. Well, yeah. That's that.
I have to read one more.
Our own.
I have to read one more. Roman Observer says, all forms of organized crime like mafias, cartels, triads are modern feudal lords in rebellion against the legitimate rulers should be dealt as such. Yes. Yes, absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Very good point.
Yeah.
All right.
Cumbrian Kulak, philosophically, I am a non-interventionist, localism over globalism, anarchy over tyranny. That moral, I mean, you don't have to be an anarchist to be a local. From that moral foundation, I'd instinctively not be an imperialist. Seeing this SH... whole countries being left to their own devices raises the question, should they be forcibly civilized or just left be? I consider the approach of the various European empires compared to the Chinese of today. Thanks for what you do, gents. Omar Awad says, leftists never care about black-on-black violence, see only inner-city gang murders. That it's also an attack on Christians is merely icing on the cake for Western eco-missiacs, the people who hate the West. And Baron von Warhawk says, the reason why what's going on in Sudan and Nigeria is not talked about on in the news is because the mainstream media is not only run by non-Christians, but by people who hate Christianity. And I'll end with a honorable mention. Russian garbage human. Need for us to do a Clay Davis impression.
Shit.
Right.
Not very good.
And no rehearsal? Could we just, Samson, could we just please show the first link from the first segment? Yes. Thank you. Do join.
See you in half an hour.
3 p.m. In half an hour, Firas is going to talk about the Syrian civil war. The second part of his episode, of his discourse about it.
I think there's going to be one more. I think there's going to be one or two more, yes.
Okay. Great. So do join. We have come to an end. Today was a very sad podcast. I think that this is sort of a bad way to begin the week, but look at the glass half full.
All necessary.
Most probably, absolutely, most probably the next ones are going to be a bit less sad.
And our hope is always in Christ.
So see you in half an hour for Realpolitik, and also see you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.